Hello, Annie Trenders. Welcome to the Girl Talku, hosted by the ladies of Anime Trending. If you're looking for a nice tea and deep dive analysis about otaku things, you've come to the right place. We love our conversation and discussion, and we're back with another fun topic on the table. My name is Gracie, and I am joined by...
Hello, I am Isabel, and...
This is Agnes.
So without further ado, the Girl Talku today will be about purely chaotic, crazy anime. Because sometimes there is just anime out there that just makes no sense. And you just learn to embrace the insanity that it actually is and just stop questioning things. And those are the anime that we are going to talk about today. So I'm kicking us off this week for this particular topic. And I want to go ahead and start with my first one, which is stuck in my head. I cannot forget it. And it is Sara Zanmai for the purely chaotic, crazy anime. Have any of you two seen Sara Zanmai?
I saw two episodes of it. And when I saw that the soul comes out of the ass through the ass crack, I said, I'm done with the show.
So you know exactly why it's in this category.
Yeah, it's like the I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The soul coming out of the butt crack was like, it reminds me of like anal beads. And I was like, I'm done with this show. I
don't need any more content. That's exactly it. Don't forget, it was physically sucked out by a kappa and they were naked. So it's a little weird, to say the least.
Well, but the thing is, what's the weirdest thing is like, that's actually how it is in Japanese mythology, too.
Right,
like,
yeah.
The soul is in the ass crack. And I was like, what?
So with that being said, Isabel, do you have an idea on it?
No, I also barely watched. I saw, like, visuals of the kappa, and I was like, I'm probably not going to watch this show. So I never really touched it.
Oh, good. You didn't get to the ass crack scene.
No, I did not.
Damn, you're missing out.
Okay, this is clearly needs to be labeled as explicit.
This has to be labeled as explicit. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that means I don't have to ask our editor to mute us when we cuss in this case.
I mean, I already said anal beads, man. I can't get any further than that.
So for any listeners who are wondering what it's about a kappa and three boys who are very, very troubled, to say the least. Two gay cops and how they're working for the Otter Kingdom. And the Otter is stealing dreams from people. And the Otter Kingdom and the Kappa Kingdom are at war. And there is an idol in there somehow, some way. So, it is just pure chaos. I remember watching the first episode and my roommate had a blast. She thought it was so funny and great and amazing. And I was just like, what the fuck did I just watch? And so that was my reaction. I did watch it to the very end. And in this case, it was, and the gay cops, by the way, are very, very, very gay, like very explicitly gay. It was, they were actually my favorite parts of the show because they had a part that was probably the most emotional of them all. And so, so that's why I liked those two the best, but it's just a lot of things were happening. The mafia was happening. Don't ask both of you. Don't ask. Okay. Tsuda-san was in there as one of the mafia characters, and then
have to explain the mafia. But if you say Tsuda-ken is the mafia,
yeah, he's like the older brother of one of the three main characters, and then he dies. But he's like abusive, but also like trapped, trapped in his love for his younger brother, and it's very complicated and confusing.
Ooh. Tsuda-ken, far away from that role.
And the kappa turns other people into kappa by sucking their soul out from their buttholes. You see a lot of buttholes in the show. The otters are kind of like a pun, or not kind of, they are a pun, because otter in Japanese and lies in Japanese sound the same, which is uso. It's just the emphasis in how quickly you say it is what differentiates between them. So the otters represent the lying kingdom, and there's like a lot of lies involved and stuff like that, and it's just very, very crazy and weird and chaotic. And it does have a theme and a story at the end. What it exactly is, I cannot say. is also important. She is the adopted child of the gay cops, but they don't remember her. But she's also the princess of the Kappa kingdom, who's supposed to marry the Kappa king, who's the one who's turning all the three kids into Kappas. It's like, I'm starting to sound like that meme where like the strings are going everywhere. <He's> like, that's what I feel like I'm doing right now. So I promise you guys, it makes sense, but it also doesn't make sense at the same time. But it really stuck in my mind. I cannot forget it. It's just iconic from beginning to end. And there was some incredible animation there. I also really like the animation style itself. Like, it looks a little more cartoonish, so it lures you into thinking that it's, like, more innocent, except it's not. It's not at all. So, oh, yeah, it's also a musical. I thought I might as well add that. There's musical songs, numbers in there that the characters will stop and break and dance into. So, yeah, questions, comments, concerns?
I just wonder how much willpower you have to, like, watch the show, or is it, like, when you first watching from, like, if you started the first episode entertaining enough to keep you watching, or I guess what drew you the most, I guess, to continue watching the show?
I think it was the songs, funnily enough. I really like the musical numbers. I'm not gonna lie. But I was curious about where the actual story is going. It's not so chaotic where there isn't a story. There is actually a story. So that's definitely what kept me going. I think if there genuinely wasn't an actual conflict in there and it's just craziness from day one all the way to the last day, I think I probably would have gotten bored. But there are antagonists, which are the two gay cops and the Usos, the otters. And then, and there are, like, there is, like, a goal that needs to be reached and stuff like that. And so I think that kept me going, per se, even if it's really weird and it makes no sense. And, and it's just all over the place. What I will say as well is their Instagram team was really, or their social media team was really committed to the bit. So in there, it's like if you, it's like if their dreams or like their, if the soul gets destroyed in there, essentially what happens is it's like they never existed. In real life, like, you don't have any memories of them, you don't have any feelings towards them and stuff like that. And so the two gay cops, who are the antagonists, but also they're like tragic sort of antagonists, per se. The Uso is the real big bad antagonist, but the two gay cops, they gosh, how much do I have to explain?
Everything at this point.
Okay, so the two gay cops used to be Kappas, part of the Kappa kingdom. Just stay with me, girls. Okay, so they used to be part of the Kappa kingdom. And then they invaded the Uso kingdom. I don't know why they did, but they did. And but their mission failed. And specifically, Mabu, who's the guy with the glasses, he, quote unquote, died. And the Usos essentially bargained the Rael, who is Miyano Mamoru's voice, Rael to...
The blonde guy, right?
Yeah, blondie. And so they got Rael to work for them, stealing other people's, like, dreams and souls. And the reason why is they've made a mechanical version of Mabu, and they promise him that the more souls he destroys and steals... the more they're able to use that energy to make the mechanical Mabu into real life Mabu. But then it turns out that it's a lie. Uso, you know, like, that's the whole point, is the otters are lies, literally. And what actually happened was Mabu got revived, but they purposefully planted a mechanical heart in him, which is basically like a ticking time bomb.
Chisato? And, question mark?
Huh?
Chisato?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a ticking time bomb in the sense that if he ever tells the truth and tells, like, Rael who he actually is and who, and that he's actually Rael's real-life lover who's still alive and that he loves him, his heart will explode and it kills him. So they're just tormenting each other. Like, they're a couple and they're tormenting each other because Rayo kind of hates Mabu for, quote unquote, resembling his dead lover, but not knowing that that's his actual lover. It would honestly be pretty abusive to Mabu to sort of take out his grief and frustration in his head. He's like, it's a machine, so it doesn't matter if I'm abusive towards him. And then obviously Mabu having to take that and want, knowing that, like, all that fear, like, all that abuse comes from his, like, grief of wishing that he was alive, except he is alive and he can't tell him that he's alive. And so it's just total torture for the two of them. But anyway, the two of them have an Instagram account because Mabu is the one who cooks, and he cooks really, really well. And, like, throughout the series, they would up-to-date the Instagram with, like, cooking photos. In the same way that Buddy Daddies had their own Instagram as well, except their Instagram is still alive and good. And so, but then what happened was, at the end, when Mabu essentially couldn't take it anymore and revealed the truth to Rio and then also told him that he loved him, it exploded his heart, and then his soul died or whatever. And then Rayo starts to, like, forget Mabu, like, just forget that he ever existed. He's desperately trying to hold on to those memories, but he can't hold on to them. And then by the end of that episode, the Instagram aunt was just erased, like, they didn't exist ever. And so I remember that because Gina, my roommate, freaked out. She was like, they deleted his social account and everything. And so I was like, I gotta give props to the social media team who really committed to the bit of this series. But yeah, it's crazy and it's fun, and Tsunakin is in it, so yeah. Okay, so that is my first one. My second one is one that I really, really enjoyed. I did not expect to enjoy it this much, but, and I think I talked about it in a prior episode, but it is called The Little Lies We All Tell. Does that name sound familiar, or is that something that you guys remember me talking about?
A little bit. I just remember the title a little bit.
Okay, and what about you, Agnes?
Nope, not at all.
Okay, no problem. So this is a slice of life comedy anime, but it's so funny in the most chaotic way possible, and it also makes very little sense, but it's so good, guys. It sucks that not a lot of people watched it. It didn't really have good promotions, but it was just really, really funny. So basically, it's called The Little Lies We All Tell because the four main characters all have secrets, and the way they introduce the four characters, like, nothing could have been better. Like, one of the characters is an alien commander from, like, who knows where, and she crash landed on Earth and used her superpowers, and she's very, very powerful, used her superpowers to make everyone think that she's this human girl who's been here in their class for forever. They're in middle school, and she's here trying to find a way to fix her spaceship and go back home. But she's an alien and pretending to, like, blend in with the people. And then it reveals that the second girl, the friend group, is, like, a runaway ninja who's actually, like, murdered people before. And she just ran away from her clan and is just trying to blend in as a normal middle school girl. And then it cuts to the third girl, who turns out to be a science experiment under the government who can read minds. And so she's the only one in the group who's like, this group is kind of messed up, because she can tell that one of them's a ninja and the other one is an alien. And because she has telepathy powers, she's the only one who can't tell that. And obviously she can't say it out loud because she doesn't want anyone to find out that she has telepathy powers either. And she's in school because she has permission from the government to essentially be in school. And then we cut to the fourth girl, except that's not a girl. It's a guy. And it turns out that his, like, sister found out her favorite idol was going to his middle school, and she essentially bullied him into switching places with her. So he's just here in this all, like, girl middle school being like, I'm a guy. I really need to hide that fact from everyone. I do not want people finding that out. And what's really funny is the telepathy girl, she can only read minds of women. So she was like, huh.
No wonder.
So she was just like, huh, I can't read this other girl's mind. That's so weird. I've never had that before. And it's just flying over her head. It's like, because that's not a girl, that's a guy, and stuff like that. And it's just their shenanigans of their everyday life. And it's so weird and chaotic and crazy. It's mainly thanks to the alien girl, because honestly, the alien girl is so overpowered. She can literally change reality if she wants to. And one of the things she did is that, and also the guy who is pretending to be a girl, he's like an absolute beauty. And so he looks like one of those cool girls is what it is. And like one of their outings, like they all received like extra, they all received extra takoyaki because they're like, oh, you're so cute, or oh, you're so beautiful, or oh, you're so elegant, you know, that sort of thing. But then when it came to the girl with telepathy, she looks the most normal. And so, you know, brown hair, braids, glasses and stuff like that. So she didn't get any extra takoyaki. And essentially she was feeling down about herself. And she's like, I get it. Like, I'm not different like the others in regards to appearances and stuff. And the alien girl was like, I will make her feel better. I will turn everyone in the world into pigs. So only she exists as a woman, and thus she will be the most beautiful woman in the world.
Okay.
I love this alien girl already.
And so the alien girl did that, literally. And the telepathic girl's just like, what are you doing? It's like just totally panicking about it. But she can't be angry either, because obviously the alien girl is doing it out of like love for her friend. So she's like, I can't even be angry about this ridiculous like thought process, but I just like, you know, sort of thing. And it's like so crazy, but it's also really cute and wholesome in all honesty as well. And a thing in there I really liked is the guy, he really bonded with these girls. Like, he saw them as his friends. He was hanging out with them on the weekends. He was talking to them and calling them. And so in one of their outings, he got recognized by one of his elementary school friend as a guy. And so he had to quickly turn around and be like, oh, I'm sorry. She, Tsubasa, which is actually his sister's name, like, Tsubasa couldn't make it today. But she didn't want you guys to feel like somebody's missing, so she asked me to come in her stead and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, okay. But immediately there's like a distance between him and the girls, because for the girls, they're like, oh, this isn't our friend. And on top of that, that's a guy. And so, but for him, you know, these are his friends. These are the girls that he are going to school with every day, that he's bonding with, he's really close to and cares a lot about. And so he's just thinking to himself, he's like, it's kind of lonely how suddenly distant it becomes the second I become a guy, you know? And he realizes that's something that he kind of has to accept that's going to happen later, because his voice, they're in middle school, so he hasn't reached the part where his voice is going to drop, but he knows his voice is going to drop at one point. And he's like, I can't keep going on this charade forever. So I just got to spend as much time as possible with them as their friend and enjoy it as much as possible, as crazy as and as insane as they all are. Like, I gotta embrace this time, because I'm not gonna have it for much longer. And I was like, that's so sweet, you know, like, it's purely just friendship, but it's so nice and heartwarming. Another funny moment is also the alien girl. So the alien girl, she's a hardened commander, right? So she has like two sides of her. It's like very super cutesy and stuff, but then there's also the side of her that's like super in charge and in control and everything. And at one point they got kidnapped. Just roll with it. Don't ask why. And so at one point they got kidnapped, and the ninja girl was convinced that it was her fault, because she is a literal assassin who's killed people the past before. And so she was like, the only way I can save my friend's life and atone is for me to kill myself. And she like tries to do it, but then the alien just like kicks the weapon away and then punches her in the face. It was like, what are you thinking about doing? Her like commander voice came out. It's like, you fight for your life no matter what. And then the alien stops and she's like, wait, that's not normal. So she quickly goes, because life is so fun, tee hee.
I'm like, deceased. Oh my god.
That was also the moment where Shada, when she watched this episode with me, was like, the alien girl reminds me of you.
So, yeah, that's
anyway, so it's great. It's chaotic. It makes little sense, but it is so, so funny. I don't think I'm going to forget it anytime soon. And yeah, so that is The Little Lies We All Tell. How do you guys feel based on like my description of it? Are you guys interested? Do you guys have questions?
Damn, I'm interested for sure. There is one screen cap that I have questions about, where they go to the pool, because I was just looking up screenshots on Google. They go to the pool, and the cross-dresser guy has boobs in the swimsuit. How do you explain that?
Okay, so the alien girl, like I said, overpowered. So she finds out about the tradition of Japanese people putting their wishes and hanging them on trees and stuff like that. And so,
okay.
Just hold on. And so she was just like, oh, these humans are so poor. Like, you know, I feel so bad for them. They can't even make their own wishes come true. They have to depend on like supernatural abilities, like a supernatural entity to grant it for them. It's like, do not worry, humans. I have the power to grant your wishes. And she's like, but that's too powerful. I can't just do it for all of humanity. I'm just going to do it for my three girls, you know, my girls. I'm going to do it for them. And at that time, the guy happened to be thinking to himself, because they agreed to go to a pool, and he's like, crap, how am I going to hide the fact that I'm not a girl at the pool with them together? Because they really, because he tried to back out of it, but then they really wanted him to be there. Obviously, because they do think he's their friend, and he also thinks he's their friend, so it was hard to turn them down, too. So he was like, and he just thinks to himself, like, man, I just wish I was a girl so I can get, like, you know, so I don't have to, like, worry about this. And then the alien grants the wish at that time. And so suddenly he was a girl for, like, a day.
It seems fantastic. Yeah, it seems very entertaining. So I think it seems like the characters really make up this show, which I think I would find very fun to watch. And yeah, I don't know which character I would like. The alien girl seems very like out, obviously like totally different from everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, they're all crazy, honestly, all of them. But the more crazier one is the alien and the ninja, and then the less crazier one is the telepathic girl and the guy. Mm-hmm. But together, it's just pure chaos. The ending is so funny, too, because literally at the end, they, like the secrets came out, but then they accidentally press a button, the spaceship just fixed itself and then went into the air, and the alien girl's like, oh crap, I can't take you guys with me. And the three of them are like, ah, we need to go back down to Earth. And so the alien self-destructed her spaceship that she's been trying to fix for the whole series, and they're just falling through down the sky, and then while they're falling, they're like, oh, but I'm so glad we could be together for this moment and stuff. And the guy's just like, aren't we gonna fall to our deaths or something? Like, shouldn't that be something we need to think about, guys? And the ninja girl is like, oh, you're right, we do have to consider it, but there's nothing for us to land. And the telepathic girl's like, well, maybe we'll just have a short life and we just have to accept it. And they're just falling.
Wow. So fatalistic.
And finally, the alien girl was just like, I need to fix this. I don't want you guys to die and stuff like that. And she's like, I will turn back time. And the three of them are like, what? Like, you can do that? And then it just cuts to 3 days prior to everything that How happened. Convenient. And the alien girl is just like, okay, I did. I saved their lives. Though, on top of that, all our memories have been reset. So,
endless loop.
Yeah, so it's like now their secrets that came out was no longer out again. Everyone had the secrets again. And the alien girl was like, that should be fine, though. I should remember. She tries to remember. She's like, why don't I remember?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's great, guys. Please check it out. But it sounds like you two enjoyed me explaining this series, if nothing else. So hopefully you two eventually, when you're feeling down, will check out this crazy chaotic anime.
Mm-hmm. Isabel, who would you paint yourself as? The ninja girl, the cross-dressing boy, the telepathy? Actually, this probably works for Girl Taku in general, now that I think about it.
Oh God, you're right.
Because if you're the spaceship girl, I'm probably the ninja, Isabel is the telepathic girl, mm-hmm. and then Jack is our unfortunate cross-dresser.
Yeah.
Because he's like the pseudo, right? Just because like he's a guy, but he's sitting on Girl Taku, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But also, I could see you guys guys flipped as well, because the and Isabel, actually, in the fact that the telepathic girl, she's kind of the most logical, so kind of like falling down where she's like, well, maybe we just have a short life, you know, we're all very weird. So like, I feel like it's something you would say. So
no, I would try to fight my way out of it, remember?
Yeah, I can't see Agnes. Agnes rarely gives up. She's set on something.
That's true. Oh, man. Anyway, all right, I've talked enough. So, Isabel, what are your purely chaotic animated do you bring to the table here today?
Yeah, so the first one is an obvious one. I wanted to talk about Gintama. Because that one's purely chaos, I feel like. For anyone who hasn't like seen the anime itself and probably know about it, they just know it's like very comedic and a lot of things don't make sense. I would say that's correct for like the first 200 episodes of the series and towards the end as well, but there's a more cohesive storyline. But if you look at Gintama seasons like 1 and 2 and that first 200 episode count, like you have to like take each episode as it goes without expecting anything, and even if you try to predict what the episode will end with, it'll probably be wrong. But yeah, I think that's one of the charms of Gintama, because you never know where an episode is going, and a lot of it is also like self-contained in each of those episodes. So like, and they go from like almost anything you can think of. The basis of Gintama is that it's kind of like a parody on anime in general and also real life as well. So there are a lot of references to like other anime like Dragon Ball, you see some Naruto, and there's also like real life references as well. Especially it's very Japanese, so a lot of some of the societal things that Gintama will make a joke about. But yeah, otherwise, you know, you have Gintoki, who's the main character, you have Shinpachi and Kagura, and the three of them make Yoruzuya, and that means kind of like odd jobs. So like it's very formulaic in that they take on odd jobs and then also meet up with other, you know, alien people that apparently invaded the city. I think it's in kind of like the Edo time period, but it's weird because it's like you have samurais in there, but then you also have like the towers where people can fly spaceships. So like it's like a whole world. But there are a few episodes I wanted to highlight for this one. And it just shows like how silly it can be. The first one is an episode where it's actually kind of a side character episode, but Jackie Chan actually appears in this episode. Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. So like one of the Shinsengumi members, he's kind of like, his name is Yamazaki, and he's like kind of like the side character. So he's like taking a class. He's like infiltrating the one of the groups and trying to figure out what the enemy's tactics are. But they're taking a class, and then Jackie Chan kind of like tumbles through the wall and is like, "Oh, I'm here to like help you with your class." And then so you're taking on kind of like this adventure with him. They're like trying to pass the class. So Yamazaki's trying to answer questions, but then his partner is Jackie Chan. And then Jackie Chan, like in the animation, like it really focuses like on his nose. Like Jackie Chan, I guess, is known for a big nose. And so, but then the episode makes it kind of like very obvious. And so Jackie Chan's like trying to protect his nose every time they run into like a fight with like the people who are acting as bad people for this test. And so it's kind of serious. And then Yamazaki is always telling like, "Hey, can you like save me or help me and not just protect your nose instead?" And then, and there's like silly moments in there where like they're like riding on a three-person bicycle. And then when they see the enemies, they try to turn around. But then when they turn around, the bike seats fall off. And so they're sitting on the poles of the bike. And obviously it's very painful. So, but yeah, that's like one of the silly things. Like you'll see a lot of references to other like characters or real life people coming into the series. And that's how you see kind of like the fourth wall broken as well. There's even like this arc of like, you know how like a lot of manga or anime, they'll have like popularity polls.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like this whole series of them with their like ranks. Like throughout the whole episode, you'll see like rank number 1 is on Gintoki. Like first place, and then it'll travel with him And then, like, Sogol Okida, he's, like, number two. And you'll see, so, like, all the characters have their numbers attached to them. And it's, like, three episodes of them fighting each other to get the top of this popularity poll, which was conducted, I think, in real life as well. It was kind of, like, a celebration for the Gintama's, like, first movie. And so they held a popularity poll. So they took that popularity poll and turned it into the anime form. So it was kind of funny, like, watching, like, 8th place versus 9th place type of thing, and they're like, oh, it's like seriously just breaking, trying to break the, like, the places on them, next to them, it's like displayed. And the funniest thing is, like, there's a lot of dick jokes in Gintama as well, so even the dick has a place of 13th or 14th, and I was just like, so, like, how could this thing, how can it have a place? But I think they just put it in for, you know, just to make it funny. But it was funny seeing throughout the episode, like, how it, like, went up in rank, or like it was attached to someone. So, but yeah, those are kind of like the silly things that you see in Gintama overall. And so, like, I go back to watch, like, several episodes, or just watch, like, some scenes all together, and I find them very entertaining and very silly. I don't know what either of you think about that, or like, I know you haven't watched all of it, but like, have you watched one or two episodes, or maybe even like the live action?
I'm gonna let Agnes talk, because I only know Gintama by clips. So.
Oh no, I only know Gintama by clips. Are you kidding me?
Oh no! So we're doomed, like, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we're doomed, because you were like, oh, I'm gonna let Agnes handle it. And I was like, sweating bullets. I'm like, oh, bitch, are you serious?
That's okay.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I just know Elizabeth. That's all I know.
You just love Elizabeth.
It blows my mind. So, like, I don't know why her character blows my mind so much, but it does. So.
You like mascot characters. That's what you like.
I do.
It shouldn't blow your mind. You're just very predictable.
Hey. No need to insult me. I mean, I know Gintama is very chaotic, and I think that's why I watch it by clips, because you can watch any clip online and just be like, what the is happening, you know, but you just kind of embrace it and take it for itself. But it's really funny, and it stands the test of time, honestly. It's like those clips, some of them are so old, but you still think it's so, sorry, it just hit me. Gintama kind of reminds me of SpongeBob.
Oh my god.
I think you can say it that way, but I actually don't like SpongeBob, so then, like, yeah.
Oh, I don't think they're similar in the fact of, like, their jokes or their characters. Like, no, they're nothing. Like, I meant, like, sort of their relevance to pop culture how they never die. Like, that's what I feel like. And Thomas, like, similar to SpongeBob in that sense. Because SpongeBob is also very clippable, and Gintama is just very clippable as well. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's crazy. Agnes?
I have no other words for Gintama other than the favorite clips that I like from Gintama, so I don't have much
commentary. What's your favorite one? What's your favorite one?
I think my favorite one is still the coffin carrying scene.
Oh yeah,
the funeral one. Break their elbows. Yeah, it's like, it's such a serious moment. You know, like, usually in anime they treat death very seriously. It's very solemn. It's a very sad affair. And all of a sudden you have Gintoki and then
Hijikata.
What's his name? They're just like breaking their arms. They're like, oh shit, you know, I can't carry this. Ooh, damn, what's gonna happen to the coffin? And they're actually like a bunch of nitwits in the episode.
Oh my god, yeah. That episode's really funny too. As one of my favorites, because Gintoki and Hijikata, like, while they're like different, they're also very similar, because they're like terrified of ghosts and things like that.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of one of the main reasons why, like, they don't want to touch the coffin at all. But I think it's okay. In the end, I think the owner came back alive, which was kind of funny. So they weren't actually dead or something. Or they came back as a ghost and they're seeing ghosts, and so they're terrified.
Oh, yeah. I see. And I think my second favorite episode was when they go to the cabaret club, the host club.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fucking broke when they threw in a reference from Sengoku Basara into there, because they were, both shows were airing at the same time. And one of the characters, I think it's one of the characters in the Shinsengumi, he was cosplaying at the cabaret club, and he goes like, it's time to party, baby, which is a line from Sengoku Basara. And he's dressed up as, like, I think it's Date Masamune, right? And he has, like, the whole, like, two-headed, like, helmet, and
he has an eye patch. Does he
yeah,
have
the eye patch, and okay, he's like yes. mimicking like the reins of like a motorcycle, which is very Date Masamune from Sengoku Basara. So I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, the host arcs are very good as well. That's the one that they decided to do live action of, which I thought was perfect.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think they could do live action out of anything else. Anything else is too zany and Gintama.
Yeah, just like out there. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, Gintama's live action people really understood the assignment, I feel, of like live action adaptations, because they just leaned into the insaneness of it. So. Alrighty, so that is your first pick. So what do you have for your second one then?
Yeah, my second one is I wanted to speak about Gurren Lagann. I don't know if either of you have seen that though.
I've seen some of Gurren Lagann. I think up until, I think like the fourth or the fifth episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Gracie? Have you seen that at all?
I have not seen Gurren Lagann.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I think that one is like kind of like one of Trigger's original works that a lot of people like, and I did not see it as kind of like a child. I feel like it's a lot for a lot of people, it's more of a childhood memory because it came out in like, oh my god, the early 2000s, and I hadn't seen it, but I saw it recently because they had their 15th anniversary this year, and so I watched the, there are two movies. One is like the first half of the series with like episode 1 to 15, and then 16 onwards is the second movie. So I watched the anime up to like episode 15 and then watched the movie afterward just to summarize it. And I thought it was really good. And Gurren Lagann is like full of chaos because just to give Gracie like a little bit of background, what in this series, there's like the humanity is kind of like stuck underground. And they're like the main point of, if you don't remember anything, it's like all about drills and mechas in this show. And so Simon, who's the main character, he's like, the only thing he's good at is drilling and finding things. And so as he's doing this, he like encounters like the face of a mecha. And so, but then like, they don't know what it is or what it does. But then he finds this part of a drill that's like a necklace. And then once he puts it in, it's like a key to open and unlocking it. And then it becomes this battle between, so like above ground, it's like these mechas that control kind of like the, I guess, I mean, the Earth is not really, like, alive in that sense. It's just kind of like a desert. But the other mechas are the ones that, like, own the land and, like, they force the people underneath. And so the whole story is basically, like, they're trying to get out of it. And so with the mechas, they're, like, fighting each other. And then there's, like, the bad mechas. I think they call them beastmen or gunmen. And so they fight each other. So like, it seems like the people are trying to fight and find their way to live above ground. And that's like the whole, I think you've seen Kamina, who's like the one with the blue hair in the series. He's probably the most iconic character. And he's kind of like full of confidence. His main line is like, you know, believe in you, believe in me that believes in you type of thing. And so like with that confidence, it kind of like goes off of that. They fight more and more mechas. They go into space and they meet a lot of more characters, which I don't find makes a lot of sense because you're like barely introduced to these characters, but they're just along for the ride. And then in the end, especially towards in the movie, I find it very similar to Promare, because you have bigger and bigger mechas fighting each other. And then at some point they're like throwing galaxies at each other. And so this is why you could see one of like Trigger's most, I guess at the time they had made it a Gainax, but it's like the series that Trigger is most proud of because they went like full out for the series. But I think if you don't like mechas, you may not like the show, but I think at the core of it, the characters, at least Demon has goes through like a character development, and seeing him kind of like progress, like he used to only do his like little thing and was like focused on one thing, but then he becomes someone like really important later on, and then he gains some friends all along the way and things like that, and gains a lot more confidence in himself. So that's kind of like the basis of it. But in terms of like meeting the mechas and kind of like the crazy parts, yeah, I kind of had to throw logic out the window, because one of the parts is like he has this little face mecha that he does, and then he combines it with Kamina's mecha, which I thought was interesting because he has a drill that drills into Kami's mecha from the top. And so Kami's like, yeah, just do it. But then like you see this drill like go through the ceiling and Kami's like sitting right underneath. And I'm like, he's gonna die. Like if he drills through the wrong way, it's just gonna kill him, like through the head. But that doesn't happen. So like, so there are like a lot of moments like that. And then there's the girl Yoko who like tries to shoot these mechas with guns as well. And by logic, you know, the bullet should just like bump off, but no, it goes through and she's able to defeat them. So like little moments like that kind of like throw logic out the window, but it gets crazier and crazier. But I can see why people really liked it. I personally really liked it. I think it's mostly for the animation as well. It definitely carries the series. But yeah, Agnes, you said you had watched about 5 episodes of it. What did you think of it when you watched it at the time?
That's a good question. I just thought it was very cool. There was a lot of aesthetics that Gainax was really trying to pour into this series of theirs. Because obviously, you know, you have the mecha influence from like Gundam. And then Kamina is like very cool, very charismatic as like this guy who like wields a samurai blade too on top of that.
Yeah.
And then you have Yoko who's like the cute girl, but is also a sniper kind of military gal that was very much like an early 2000s trend. So I think Gainax was trying to do a lot. And at the time I was very much wowed by it because it was just like, wow, this is so zanny. This is so amazing. This is brilliant. But I think over time I just ended up dropping the series just because I wasn't as interested in it anymore. So that's my fault in its entirety. But I do know that Kamina's death was a very big social impact in the anime sphere culture because no one expected that Kamina would die, right? He dies halfway in the series too and is the motivation for Simon to do better. So when Kamina dies is I think when people started giving giving the show more credit to itself and its writers and really like dig into the show and watch it all the way to the end. I unfortunately didn't get there. I just saw the clip and I'm like, oh, how sad. And then I moved on. So that's my fault, really.
Yeah, it was a touching scene, actually. I didn't expect him to die either. I thought, I just thought he would be there because he seemed so confident. I'm like, oh, this should be the main character or something, right?
Yeah, and it's not. It's actually Simon at the very end.
Yeah. So I think like moment like that definitely stood out for a lot of people. I heard that people cried over the series as well, even though they didn't expect to. I personally didn't, but I could definitely see the scenes. Like it made me very sad. Like I kind of like, I think after he dies, there's like this longing for him that you might have. Like, oh, I want to see him again. Like, and then, yeah, the fact that the series doesn't die after that is really nice as well. But yes, Gracie, based off that, I don't know if you have any questions about Gurren Lagann.
No, actually. I guess my only thing I was wondering is since there are, like, I was curious, Agnes, from the first 5 episodes, did you think it was chaotic in the way that Isabel did?
It was pretty chaotic, but I think compared to the series that I have for this podcast, I could still follow Gurren Lagann, so it wasn't as chaotic as I thought it was.
Okay, well, and now you gave yourself a perfect lead.
Yeah, no, I gave myself a perfect lead, but I'm just going to continue off of Isabel because it feels like for Isabel, like you love chaos, but you also like something that makes sense in the long run. And both Gintama doesn't make sense in the long run because it's very episodic up until a certain point at the very end where things start to really make sense. And then you have a series like Gurren Lagann in which it feels like it's chaotic, but there is a fairly cohesive story up until the end. So I feel like that's something that you still enjoy and not something that is super crazy where you're just like, huh? And trying to like figure out why is this happening? What is the reason why this is the way that it is?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for me, it has to have some type of logic. Otherwise, I will definitely drop it. Like, I definitely do not want to watch that anymore.
That makes sense, yeah.
But yes, I want to know about what you had.
Oh, this is probably my most cursed research that I've done for a series because I will give a preface. I have not completed either of these 2 series, but it's enough to go read it on Wikipedia and or skim through videos because of how zanny and crazy it is.
Okay.
So the first one I want to highlight is Magical Destroyers, which is a series that Gracie absolutely could not understand by the first 3 episodes.
My head actually hurt.
And so for people who have never heard about Magical Destroyers, this was a series that aired in 2023 and is actually from the same animation studio as the 100 girlfriends who really, 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 really love you. Mm. And the reason why this is important context, why Gracie doesn't really like it, is that the magical destroyers start with, it is around 2008, 2011, where there's this mysterious organization that is in Akihabara, right? This is modern day Akihabara. And they basically start restricting otaku culture. So anything that is otaku or like fetish related, or if you love things like trucks and trains or robots, or even like anime, they completely confiscate it. They take all the DVDs, they take all the merchandise, and they basically just trash it and confiscate it and ruin Akihabara for a lot of the otakus who actually live there. And in the midst of all this chaos, because apparently this mysterious organization also like shoots people and kills the otakus because they're trying to like rid the world of like quote unquote filth, there's a anti-faction that comes out from another organization, which is the Revolutionary Army. It's led by the main character who's known as the Otaku Hiro, and he's aided by three magical girls. As you can see, there's a lot of tropes being thrown in here, right? Three magical girls. One is called Anarchy, the other one's named Blue or Blueberry, but Blueberry is kind of like a BDSM type of girl that really is into like being the sub. And then you have Pink, who's this kind of like weird magical girl that fights with gas and syringes and all sorts of like weird notions of death. And they basically, throughout the entire series, try to fight back against the mysterious organization up until the very end, where they realize like their results are kind of like futile. And MC actually dies. Otaku Hiro actually dies at the very end because he was unable to subvert the ending, which was the antagonist, who I'm going to call as TV Man because it's more identified as TV Man. TV Man turns out to be kind of like this elitist who hates otaku and basically orchestrated this whole Akihabara war in order to kill the otakus and also kill the MC. And it's according to his quote-unquote script, which is literally like a script book, like a panel, like that mangaka or like script writers would draw and write in to outline the story. But at the very end, the TV antagonist realizes that even though Otaku Hiro has died, there are other place who are there are others who will stand in his place and become another hero. And the war for the Akihabara war continues. And from that is already a very crazy, crazy premise. Overall, when you watch the actual episodes, they make no fucking sense whatsoever. The action is incredibly zany from this really small animation studio, which is Bilberry Animation Studios. There is nothing that is cohesive. The characters don't really have personalities, but they're just very zany, all over the place, very rambunctious, loud. They curse a lot. And it's just crazy. Gracie didn't understand it. But what I realized through my research for Magical Destroyers is why that concept came into fruition. And it was an original Japanese anime series that actually started from a guy named Jun Inagawa, who is a sort of an all-round content creator. He's an illustrator, he's a DJ player, he creates clothing, like designer clothing that even Billie Eilish wore, and he was really super geek cult into geek culture and being very unapologetic about showing yourself as an otaku. There's a couple of interviews that he did with other news outlets, including I think Crunchyroll, where he talks about the process of Magical Destroyers, which was basically his dream of creating this show since he was in high school. Mm. And a lot of the influences from Magical Destroyers was actually because of the fact he had moved from Japan to the United States when he was in middle school and high school. And in America, he found that there were so many people who were very unapologetic about geek culture, or specifically being an otaku, versus in Japan, being an otaku is a very taboo type of group. In America, he would talk about his experience going to like Anime Expo and also the skater culture that was prevalent in LA as well. And so he was very inspired by this type of like bombacity and being very unapologetic about doing what you love and buying and expressing what you love, and wanted to kind of like translate that back into a series that does not give a shit about what others think. In a way, in a very like largely meta way, which he does also claim that there are some parts in the series where he didn't really think too deeply about it. But in a way, Magical Destroyers, the antagonist serves as an elitist who kind of like tries to gatekeep things and say like, oh, I hate otakus because they're so beneath me, they're just so shallow, and I'm the only one who's the quote unquote better otaku because I have better knowledge of things, or I have a better vision of how the world's going to be. And so that in itself, I was kind of like, you know, in the long side of it, it's very inspiring that you draw and write and even animate a story like this, which is amazing. But at the same time, there's a lot of plot holes. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. And at the end of the day, I do have to give it props that it does like this really weird, subversive, surreal comedy on the magical girl genre.
Yeah, obviously, I'm not a big fan of the series itself. I do require a little bit of understanding of it, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I felt like it just kind of ultimately didn't go anywhere. But I appreciated your research because that, funnily enough, clicked some things as where I was like, oh, I see this in the series now. And oh, I get it now. So thank you for doing that.
There's a lot of... The problem also with Magical Destroys is that it's a big homage to otaku culture in general, that there are several and multiple references scattered throughout the entire series. There's a lot of influence from like Gundam, which you see in a lot of like typical shows like Gurren Lagann, for example. But there's also like talk about like BDSM, which is prevalent in Blue, one of the magical girls. There's other niche subcultures like cosplay, Harajuku references. There's a skater culture. Anarchy is literally named Anarchy, and she kind of represents a lot of like the American culture. She flips the middle finger very often in the series, which is not common in a Japanese series because the middle finger doesn't mean anything. And she uses a lot of curse words, and she's very vulgar, which is very similar to like American culture. And there's also other things like Kill la Kill and Fooly Cooly, who he was really inspired to do a series on. And there's even a segment near the end of the series where Anarchy is fighting somebody, but they're fighting in a video game setting. It's like their bodies and souls get transported into a video game setting. And the entire fight scene of Anarchy versus the enemy, instead of like a nice fluid animation series that we're usually seeing in anime, it just becomes reduced down to like 8-bit pixels of like a Mario game. And it's just really funny because you're just like, oh, that makes sense, because metally they're in a video game world, and so therefore it has to have this type of interpretation rather than, you know, a nice grand animation film of like characters like circling around each other like firing off spells, right? It's literally just a pixel game. So at that point, after doing my research, I had a little bit of a better appreciation for Magical Destroyers, but it's just so incredibly zany that I don't think I can actually look back and touch the show again in its entirety.
Completely understandable. All right, well, that's your first one. Did you do research for the second one then?
I did.
Okay.
And this one, funnily enough, kind of follows the same route as Magical Destroyers, in which there's a really great vision behind it. But the difference with Magical Destroyers is that Magical Destroyers is a flop because anime fans were thinking like, oh, this is some meta love letter to otaku culture, not some crazy, weird, zany exploration and everything. But the other anime that I want to highlight is actually now like a pulp fiction sort of like a cult favorite, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And that's Space Dandy.
Oh, okay.
And everybody knows what Space Dandy is at this point. Space Dandy came out in like the early, I think, what was it, like 2014, where things were really weird for anime. We were just around the cusp of like anime needs to be mainstream and needs to be on all these streaming platforms like Netflix and simulcast dubs and everything. But Space Dandy is very unique in that it's kind of like a tie between what anime used to be and what anime is now. When Space Dandy was released, it was done under Watanabe's name. Watanabe was the creator of Space Dandy, or at least the person who came up with the concept for Space Dandy. And people were thinking like, oh, it's going to be like this great realistic series, kind of like Samurai Champloo and Cowboy Bebop, which he was the director for. But it turns out that Space Dandy was actually this massive artistic undertaking project where Watanabe basically hires every single animator he knows, gives them the episode rights, and says, make your own story for one episode.
Oh.
And so the entirety of Space Dandy is 24 episodes that are not connected together whatsoever.
That is so interesting. Okay.
For the fact that each episode features similar core tenets, which includes Dandy, who is just a dandy cowboy, a space cowboy specifically, who just goes around and hunts aliens with his two little sidekicks on a spaceship, and he spends his time at a place called Boobies, which is basically the story's rendering of Hooters, and also features a a government agent named Scarlet who kind of like processes all their applications of capturing aliens. Those are the only things that make sense in every single episode, but every single episode is basically a hallmark for animators to just explore with phenomenal art, color, and sakuga, and just make it their own under Watanabe's name.
That is it's so cool. A playground. That is yeah, so
there's
cool.
There's a really cool video that I watched about it that's called The Show That Changed Anime, The Beauty of Space Dandy by Slime Fancy Pants on YouTube, that does a great explanation on why this is basically like a massive art project for the animators. And it's just really cool that when you look at it from that type of like viewpoint, that it's just, you know, the fun that animators have while being in this crunchy ass industry that basically sucks the soul out of them, right? So I definitely would recommend Space Dandy over Magical Destroyers, but come with the appreciation for sakuga and for animation in Space Dandy. I also want to point out that there are some YouTubers who also mentioned that Space Dandy, although it was incredibly episodic, does have one thing that connects them all the episodes together, other than the bare basics of like Dandy and like the characters involved, is that you can link every episode if you consider the concept of the multiverse or parallel world. And that's because apparently in the ending credits of Space Dandy of every episode, there is a reference to parallel universe and space hopping and time jumping. And it's also even explained by Space Dandy himself to one of his ex-girlfriends in one of the videos, which basically tells you like, well, all these stories are very non-connected together, but at any point in time, anything can happen, which explains a lot of the other episodes that happen in the series where Dandy just basically outright dies. Like, he and his crewmates will, like, die from an explosion, or he and his crewmates die because of starvation. They become zombies on their spaceship. But then the next episode is, oh, they're alive. They're doing the same thing. It's just a different adventure, right? Okay. So that was, like, where everyone was kind of, like, starting, like, to theory craft about Space Dandy and really try to come up with something unique about Space Dandy, when really it's just Watanabe being like, yeah, it's an art project. Have fun with it. So I think that was just really interesting to see, like, these two sides of, like, it's an industry perspective and then also, like, a fan perspective as well.
Well, that is a really good way to pitch Space Dandy, because believe it or not, I didn't watch that one, but that is right up my alleyway. Like, that's the type of creative things I like to see, so I think I'm definitely going to...
That's because I told you before. Oh. If you had watched Space Dandy before I told you any of this, before I did my research, you would have hated it as much as Magical Destroyers, because there's no continuity whatsoever.
Huh. Okay. Well, that's really interesting. Isabel, have you seen it? I feel like you've mentioned it before, no?
No, actually, I have not seen it.
Must have been another space one then.
Yeah. I think Space Dandy, I think the only other person would have watched it is maybe Nico or James.
Yeah, okay. I think so. Probably one of those two. I've only seen the poster for it, and I always thought the design was interesting, but yeah, hearing you talk about it, I'm not sure if I would have liked it too, because there's no continuity. But yeah, it seems like he's like collecting Pokemon or something in this universe.
Yeah,
pretty much. But like I said, watch it for the sakuga and the art, because it is phenomenal. You know, like how in anime these days you have like a monster creator as the one of the staff credits in an anime show?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Space Dandy doesn't have that. And they create the most intricate and complex alien designs that I've ever seen. And I'm like, damn, where was this when we needed it, right? They're all very unique. And I do agree that Space Dandy has a very mind-blowing animation team or teams overall, because it's just a bunch of different people with different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I think that definitely sums it's such a good way to end this episode, because Space Dandy, I do think, is a very iconic series. It's a classic now, so I think I'll check it out. Like, I'm definitely interested. I do love the creative process behind it, so that's a big reason as to why I would want to support it anyway, even though it's quite old now. Mm-hmm. Alrighty, so thank you everyone for listening to us discuss our crazy, most chaotic anime that we've seen. We will not be back with the next another episode next week. And the reason why is because of the Anime Trending Awards. We will be streaming next weekend on March 9th at 6 p.m. PST. And so PST being Pacific time zones in the U.S., so use Google or whichever to help with the time zones. But we'll be streaming on YouTube and on Twitch. And then, of course, we'll be live updating on our socials as well. So we will not be recording next week. But other than that, I hope you guys had a great time. And I hope you guys will join us for our Anime Trending Awards. We are really, really excited. And yeah, and hope you guys will be here next time when we're back after a week. So bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye.